and welcome to the Steady Awesome podcast. Last week when we were here, there was a title challenge, but now is there really one left? I don't know. It's up to you to decide as I welcome our usual panel. Let's bring in Nikki Bandini and of course Gab Marcotti as we round up all the insane action from Serie A with the losses and the wins, and all of a sudden everything's turned around. And let's just say that there's been a few meltdowns in this household. But anyway, let's start with the biggest game that happened last night. We're recording this on a Wednesday morning. And of course, it was Milan hosting Juventus. This was an insane game. 2-0, Juventus were leading at the start of the second half. And then, bam, they conceded 3 goals in just over 5 minutes. And then eventually one more to make it 4-2 to the Rossoneri. Nikki, I know you had so much to say about this. So much is happening with Milan at the moment with Ralph Ranieri. I feel like we should maybe start there because this is sort of the game was so amazing. But considering how well Pioli is doing, considering how well Milan are doing since, you know, after COVID-19, if you like, the lockdown, it would be insane to get rid of this man at this point in time.
Well, I mean, it's definitely a question to me. I think it's sort of this incredible situation now where Stefano Pioli, let's put this into context. Since lockdown, Milan haven't lost. They drew their first game back in the Coppa Italia against Juventus on 10 men for, 73 minutes after Rebic gets sent off, go out on away goals. Since then, they smashed Lecce. They beat Roma 2-0. They did draw with Spal. They had 39 shots in that game to Spal's 5. So it was a bit of an anomalous result. They go to Rome and they beat Lazio 3-0 at the Stadio Olimpico. And now they come back and they beat Juventus 4-2 the game is going to need to talk about because it's one of the wildest games of football that I've seen in any context in a long time. But against all this backdrop, literally the day before the Juventus game, we have this big news drop that Ragnick, it's not a secret that Ralph Ragnick is, you know, I still don't know if I'm saying that right, Ragnick or Ragnick, whichever it is coming in to take over as manager next season, and that's been agreed. It's not a surprise because we've talked about it on this podcast for months. I mean, we've known that Ragnick is the person that Gazidis wants, the person that Elliot wants as a management group. But I find it close to sort of unfathomable. Like, if Pioli continues this to the end of the season, if Milan keep being this to the end of the season, you've already gone through 8 managers in 6 years since you got rid of Max Allegri. You finally find one who seems to have things going in the right way. And again, what Pioli's doing since lockdown to me feels almost like the most relevant part of anything he's done. He took over a team that was in the bottom half, by the way, so the fact they're up to 5th is already something. But what happens since lockdown, that's, you know, a manager who didn't get pre-season because he took over from Giampaolo in October. The first time he's had a chance to stop, to reset, to actually work with his squad and implement his ideas properly. Since then, they've been brilliant. And the idea that you're just going to throw that out because something you already decided, it's so uncomfortable for me. I think, you know, Pioli will be fine. He's going to get a great job off the back of this if he is on the way out. I also think it would be incredibly uncomfortable. Some of the ideas have been talked about that maybe he could work with Ranić for the first season or something like that. But I don't know. I think there are a lot of Milan fans looking at the situation right now and thinking, really? We're going to get rid of this guy who finally has us on the right track? It feels wrong.
Gab, I feel like you defend Milan directors a lot and you always see their point of view in a way that sometimes maybe I haven't.
Especially Bob. Yeah.
But I do.
All right. Look.
What do you think about all this?
All right. So first of all, the Ragnick deal is not done. This story comes from, at least from what I've been told, the Ragnick deal is not done. He's not definitely coming. This story at this stage comes from the fact that Ivan Gazidis, it was reported by Alessandro Alciato the other day from Sky Italia, that Ivan supposedly told Paolo Maldini that Ragnick is coming. And then that makes itself, that makes it into the media. Now, if there's two people in that conversation, you can probably guess where the story comes from. Pioli I'll get to Pioli in a second, but as far as Ragnik's concerned, I think the ownership felt that the people who've been in charge in terms of recruitment have kind of recruited things very much old style. They've gone out and said, oh, let's go and get this guy because he's got a great heart, and you know, let's get this guy because he has experience. If they don't push youngsters, they don't go out there, they scout in the same places, in the same way. You know, they didn't like Todibo before he went to Barcelona, and then he goes to Barcelona, and then all of a sudden they're ready to spend 20 million on him, right? Because he's a Barcelona player. You know, never mind that, as you know, Todibo's done nothing at Barcelona because he's very young. So they said, we want to go a different direction. I think Rangnick had a ton of appeal for them and still does and may yet come in. But Rangnick makes sense from the organizational perspective, essentially a director of football, a supercharged director of football perspective. The issue is Rangnick believes that I can't make this work unless I'm also the coach or I have some sort of puppet coach. I want to have total control. I want to go back to, you know, the old Sir Alex model where he's in charge of everything, which I personally think is a mistake. I think, and I said this all along, Pioli is so versatile as a coach that he can work under Rangnick. He can basically take instruction from Rangnick, have a dialogue with Rangnick and say, we're going to do this. Because, you know, in the end, it's about your style of play. It's not so much about in-game management. It looks as if that's not an option, or certainly that's been the noise coming from the Rangnick camp. And so I think from the ownership perspective, they said, well, look, Pioli was an interim coach anyway. He only has a contract through the end of the season. Why should we deviate from our course? Because remember, if you keep Pioli and you don't get Rangnick, then you still have a problem, because then you still need a director of football. And you still need, because that, let's face it, that has been Milan's biggest problem, right? Because whether it's the money spent on Paquetá, whether it's Donnarumma's contract, whether it's Çalhanoğlu's contract, I mean, all this stuff that simply hasn't worked well is down to the recruitment, and almost like the two ideas that they had recruitment-wise. So they're obviously in a tricky situation. Best situation would be where Maldini, Rangnick, and Pioli all stay, and maybe where Maldini takes a bit of a step back and says, hey, why don't I, you know, I have zero experience as a director of football. I had zero experience before I came into Milan. What is my skill set? What can I learn? How can I learn from these people? But I think it's difficult for him to do. I think if Maldini's there, Maldini wants to be in charge.
Listen, I sort of understand Maldini's point of view, because he doesn't want to come in and sort of just be like the mascot.
Sorry, he's not coming in. Let's make it clear. He's not coming in. He's there. I know, but the reason that they're bringing somebody else in is because of the bad choices and bad decisions that have been made while he was there. Whether it's down to him or Boban or Massara, I'll leave that up to you. But, you know, let's be clear on this.
But, okay, so obviously we already know that he's there, yeah, which is why they have managed to attract some talent, albeit others that have been, you know, that have failed or whatever it is you want to say. I understand him not wanting to stay on if Rangnick does come on. We know that there's been some stuff said in May where he said that he needs to have a little bit more respect, Rangnick, when it comes to wanting total power. So we know that there's a situation there that's a little bit strange. Now, is there a way that they can all coexist? Now, you said that a lot of this is to do with the fact that, you know, that they want to take this up, be a bit modern, allow them to scout in places they haven't scouted before, allow them to really just step into the new era and not be the kind of Milan side that's only interested in players because they have a reputation for being a Barcelona player or whatever it is. And I totally understand that. But then also, if we are stepping into the future, there's not really that many clubs anymore that are just dependent on this one man who does everything. So if situations are fluid and they change all the time, if you happen to have stumbled across a coach who is doing a marvelous job and at least on a psychological level has created a bond within this team and they are following him wholeheartedly, it's crazy when you see that Ibrahimovic is so seemingly in love with Pioli, or at least happy to work with him, and they get along so well. When you see the wonderful partnership that is between Benacer and Kessié, these are all players you don't want to lose, obviously. They have brought in some good players, Benacer being one of them, obviously Theo Hernandez being another one. Rafael Leao perhaps as well is going to be something special in the future. So they haven't all been mistakes. So Is there a way that we can, I'm a big fan of writing, so I can understand why you would want to go there. But surely depending on this one man who, as much as all the things that he's done, Italy is a different type of culture. And it's a difficult place to really be in sometimes. And I think it's a little bit of a shock to the system from people coming in from different countries and seeing how this all works. Like, is there a way of just continuing this thing where perhaps you're not so dependent on one man, like a little bit like they were on Giampiero Ventura, bringing in this beautiful style of play that all just was thrown away 6 weeks later. So
Giampiero Ventura, do you mean Marco Giampaolo?
Oh, yes, Marco Giampaolo. Sorry, too bad, Pete Coaches.
I'm sorry, it's just whenever you mention that name, Ventura, I start breaking out in hives. I get really uncomfortable. So, yeah, sorry.
When I think bad coaches, I get really confused by all of them. So, this is my issue, is that, you know, I just feel like a little bit of stability would go so long.
They've tried it, right? They tried doing that. They tried selling Rangnick on the idea of saying, why don't you come in and you effectively become head of football, and Maldini works alongside you, learns from you, because you know what, the guy may be 50 years old, but the guy's never held this job. In fact, for 10 years after he retired, he had no job. So they've tried that, but Rangnick won't accept that. Maldini won't accept that. Pioli probably would accept it, which is sort of the irony here.
So but get rid also, of Maldini.
Sorry?
Get rid of Maldini.
Well, you know, that takes a lot.
But I don't know if you should get rid of Pioli.
I think the other thing, though, with Pioli that we need to remember is, you said they stumbled upon, right?
Mm.
You know, I'm not sure how old Pioli is. I'm going to guess he's about 55. He's got a long career in Serie A. It's not like you've unearthed a gem. You found a guy who, even his critics said, was a company man, was a really good, I mean, as I said, that's why I said he was a perfect appointment for Milan at that stage. But you still have the issue upstairs. You still have the issue with the recruitment. And some of those signings that you mentioned that were very good signings, like, or have turned out well, like Bennacer and Rafael Leao, you know, I think internally there were probably questions about whether who drove those signings, how they ended up at the club, how the director of football at the time felt about those signings. I think all these things come together, and I think that's why they feel they have to make that choice. And if I can say one other thing about the harmony in the camp, I know Ibrahimovic wants to stay. I know that Zlatan Ibrahimovic is eternal, that he's the Norse god, that, you know, Highland or whatever. But the dude is 38 years old, and you cannot run your club based on the fact
I don't
that Ibrahimovic is happy, right? Because he's like a big elephant in this room, right?
No, oh my God, we want to lose Ibra. I want to come in on that because I think, like, yes, that's true, and I agree with you.
Yeah,
but I think one of the things that's been most impressive about Pioli's Milan is that actually, like, this idea we built up, us included, guys, we talked about it on this podcast, that they had become Ibra dipendente, that they were reliant on him, has basically been dispelled over the last few games.
Yeah.
Yes, he's back now and he's scoring, and it was great fun watching him score that penalty against Juventus, because Ronaldo was giving Szczesny a little pep talk saying, you know this guy, you're going to save for him. So when Ibra scored, he turned around and tried to give some back to Ronaldo. And look, that's great fun. It's a great narrative.
Right.
But this team is not Ibrahimovic anymore.
Which is all the more reason to let Ibrahimovic go.
Yeah, but that's not my point. My point is not to say, oh my God, they really need to keep Ibra. My point is, the fact is that what you have is that Pioli is getting along with everyone, whether you're a kid, whether you're a superstar. There is harmony in the room. I don't care. I mean, I don't want to keep Ibra either. If I'm Milan, I'm like, bye, go to Sweden, you know, wherever you want to go. The guy's too old for you at the moment. And Rebic is doing amazing things, and so are Çalhanoğlu and all the others. But my point is the fact that you've got a coach right now, and I'm sorry, but psychology matters, and it matters to have a happy team. And right now they had that. They had it under Gattuso. They lit it all. They threw it all away and started again. And fine, I get that. He doesn't play a style of football you love so much. But my point is when you have a coach that, you know, you're right, he is a pragmatist, but there's not that many coaches that you can really attract.
I just on the Pioli is a pragmatist thing. Pioli's a tremendous manager. But I know we like to make these distinctions between, we use the word pragmatist to say, like, oh, a guy who's a defensive coach and a beautiful football guy's an attacking coach. The amazing thing about Pioli is Pioli can be whatever you want to be.
Exactly.
I don't think that there is a coach in Italy who can go and play the kids and play a high press and go full on Bielsa, while at the same time also deciding that if he's got different sorts of players, he can go and he can play the 8-1-1 formation and go full Manzana. He can do both. So
exactly.
That's why I think he was there as a resource. Whether he's got the personality, though, longer term, obviously that is the question mark. And I think without sorting out who is above him, because unfortunately in Italy, we have a situation where the president and the sporting, not unfortunately, it's the character of time in football. The president and the sporting director are the face of the club more than the coach, or as much as the coach. And you need to have those pieces in place. And at Milan, they have a guy, Ivan Gazidis, who cannot speak the language, or if he can, he never does. And they have a director of football type who clearly they're not happy with many of the choices that he has made. So they need to sort that. And I think the person who pays the price for this in the end is going to be Pioli. And in some ways it's a shame, in some other ways I can understand it.
The boardroom is super interesting, but can we talk about this game? Because I think this is the most insane game of football that I've watched all season. 45 minutes of basically cagey football. Milan looked a lot like they had in the two cup games against Juventus, where it's like, okay, we're going to sit back in these deep banks and we're not going to give you room. And you have like one mode of this game. Okay, it's going to be a tight game. We'll see who scores the first goal. 2 minutes into the second half, Adrian Rabiot scores a worldie, like out of nowhere. Like Adrian Rabiot, who's been, you know, not present all season, scores this insane goal, wins the ball in his own half, rides a challenge from Kessier, nutmegs Theo Hernandez, runs half the pitch, puts it across his body into the top corner. Ronaldo scores quickly afterwards, and it's game over, right? Like, we're finished. This is done here. Then three goals in 6 minutes for Milan, starting with that Ibrahimovic penalty, a fourth goal after that. What happened, guys? Like, this was insane.
And Juve were playing, this is the other thing. I mean, you said it was cagey. I actually thought Juve were playing well. I think Juve were playing at the same level that they had these previous games, just against a slightly better opponent in Milan. And that's the most remarkable thing. You know, Rabiot, you know he can do that. You just don't see it very often because the guy's got a boatload of issues and baggage and whatever else. But yeah.
That might be the goal of the season so far.
You know,
to me.
We have to mention this though, right? Because my first instinct was, oh my God, a Juve team throwing away a 2-0 lead in the second half. But then of course I remembered back to that wonderful day in Florence when the same thing happened and Giuseppe Rossi scored a hat trick, of course. But you know, and that, by the way, that was the Juve team that got 102 points, if I'm not mistaken. That was Antonio Conte's Juve. So, you know, that was a different context. This was remarkable. And I think the challenge from Juve's perspective for Sarri is to say, guys, we made a bunch of individual errors, because I think they did. We had the upper hand for most of the game. Dybala's back for the next game. De Ligt will be back. Let's just keep going and let's just get this done. Let's not throw away the good work that we've done so far.
I think that's what it is. It's weird because usually, you know, I'm up in arms and complaining about Sarri and everything. And, you know, this is just everything is just fallen by the wayside. But I feel like on this occasion, firstly, I'm not that surprised. This happens to Juventus, especially if they face a team that's really like gearing itself up and starting to up the tempo, which is exactly what Milan did. Also, I do feel sorry for the fact that when you do have a backline that has Danilo and Rugani at the same time, I mean, accidents like this will definitely happen.
Sorry. I just want to jump in here because I know...
Because it was Bonucci's penalty.
It's Danilo and Rugani who they're the source of all evil. They stink and whatever.
They are. But
first of all, on the last goal, I believe that was Alexandro, by the way, right? The world's best left back, gave Mr. 80 million.
I don't even know
but this was a complete... What? Mm-hmm.
I don't even know he was trying to pass through that ball.
But I think we have to, in the same way that we praise Bonucci when he plays well, and he's this great leader, I'm sorry, this is a game where I can deal with you making individual mistakes, but you have to step up in terms of leadership.
And but we've said this last week when I spoke about De Vrij, I said to you, Koulibaly needs Maximovic, Bonucci needs a good person alongside him. I told you this from the start. The moment you take that away from him, Bonucci crumbles.
Okay, well listen, if Bonucci needs a good player, a better player than he is alongside him, yeah. then maybe it's time to remove him from our automatic list of World Trade Center.
We've said that all the time.
Back.
Why did I tell you I want Demiral and De Ligt? Why do you think I've been so...
I know, I saw that tweet. I saw that tweet about the future, Demiral and De Ligt. I don't know. So is it time just to go? And because I didn't think Rugani was as terrible as he was good, but he wasn't as terrible as people made him out to be. And I know that this poor guy
he
is going to get all
right
the abuse.
In front of Revich. What are you doing? Are you a mascot? Are you just there and present? Well,
because maybe he didn't want to commit himself to Revich. I'm not saying he did great, but you pay your superstars a lot of money to show leadership in times like this. And this was as much on Bonucci as it was. Bonucci's more responsible for the defensive meltdown than anybody else in that Juve back four on the day.
Yeah, I agree.
And I think that's what you need to ask about.
Yeah, I agree. And this is why I say to you, if you have a player like De Vrij, you don't need anyone else because he can be that guy, everything for you. Bonucci can't. He just simply cannot be that guy. So yes, it's very unfair to just blame Danilo and Rugani because Bonucci is effectively him giving away the penalties, what led to the meltdown. But what I'm saying to you is that this is a team that had holes at the back. I'm not surprised because, you know, we mentioned and everyone remembers Fiorentina, obviously. But even there are just moments where I just remember even Bayern Munich when they just conceded goal after goal in the Champions League. And they had, you know, Bayern grabbed a last minute equalizer, scored two in extra time. And that was it. It was over for Juve. When Juve feel overwhelmed, it's very hard for them to get back. And I thought, you're right. In the first half, they did a really good job. And I thought that they were passing the ball really beautifully. I thought it was like, yes, look at this. They don't need anyone else. You know, it doesn't matter that Higuain is playing, but it matters at the end of the day. And I think that Milan have something that at the moment, I haven't seen that much of from Juventus, which is that teamwork, which is like, let's fight for every single ball. Right. It's a lot of, let's depend on the fact we're excellent and we can win this. So,
is it, I mean, how much, all right, let me ask you flat out, if Dybala and De Ligt had they been there, would Juve have lost this game?
No, I think they would have drawn. I'm still not sure they would have won it there. But I don't think there would have been the massive collapse that there was at the back.
Yeah, I don't think I can answer with both those players because if Dybala's in the attack, it's a completely different game. Like, it's just a different shape to the game, all of it. I mean, De Ligt, you're going to say maybe a little bit more, okay, it's a superior defender. But I'm sort of with you, Gab, in that, yes, Rugani was bad. And let's not hide from that because, you know, even the Leao goal, which he deflects in, he actually had just clattered Rebic and could have given away a free kick beforehand. But everyone in that defence was... really bad. I mean, Cuadrado gets nutmegged on Kessié's goal. Sandro plays the world's most unexplainable pass for the fourth goal. Penalty, even, like, you know, that was one of those decisions which I think almost got cast as a, oh, that's a VAR handball. It wasn't. Like, when you see the replay, Bonucci is using that arm to get in front of Rebic. It's a handball. It's a really sort of deliberate one, I think. They all were bad. Even Ronaldo gave away the ball for one of the goals. I can't remember which one now, but he gave away the ball in midfield that started it. There's, you know, this was a collective effort, the collapse. And I think that is something that I'm not really, personally, I'm still pretty convinced Juventus are going to win the league, right? But given that this is the first serious test they face in the league since we come back, the next game is against Atalanta. And just to be a little bit mischievous, just a little bit, if Atalanta win this game, Atalanta, who have won every game up till now, they're playing Sampdoria tonight. For all I know, by the time you're hearing this, they would have lost and that will ruin it.
Oh, if
they beat Sampdoria tonight, and then they beat Juventus. So
then Juventus lose to Lazio, then it's only 3 points.
Six-point gap.
Oh, look at that. Sorry, I know we've got to move on, but can we all just get one last thing on... on Aaron Ramsey. I just checked how many minutes he played. It felt like it was even longer. No. But honestly, I don't know that I've seen a worse performance in packed into 20 minutes. The number of times, I don't know if he's not fit or whatever. The number of times that he gave the ball away and that he failed to do, not right. Why are you sending him on? Like, I know, I'm being...
Jimmy's gone.
I don't accept...
We can't handle what Cap talking about Aaron Ramsey anymore.
No, I have to assume that he's not fit, right? Or that there's something wrong with him. But then why does Sarri send him on? Did Sarri send him on to be like, oh, look, I have to bring, you know... I mean, at that point, bring on Muratore, which he did later, to go and kick people. That's fine. But, you know,
it's a way of reassuring Alexandra for his bad cross, Rugani and Bonucci for their bad defense.
Well, look, here's another one.
who's really mad as well. So there you go.
All right, Nikki, this is where I remind you that, you know, he was Arsenal's player of the year.
Like, Nikki, you had to see this coming.
It's just Gab's one-man campaign.
It's not. There's an army of millions.
Where we can millions.
I would not be extraordinary.
Listen, I felt the same way about Rabiot, and then he came up with that Waldy. Hey, so, you know what? I don't even know what to think, but...
Yeah. By the way, I know, like, producer Freddie is going to kill us if we don't stop soon, but Pioli's substitutions brought on Çalhanoğlu, Bonaventura, Leao. I know there are obvious substitutions, but every single one of those contributed to a goal, so...
Yes, again, and I just wanted to make a point, right, because I completely forgot about this, but when you say pragmatic, it's so true. Gab was saying we're always needs defensive, but what I love about Pioli is, even back when he was at Chievo Verona, the guy is such a modern guy. He knows how to do everything, you know? I honestly didn't think he was capable of doing this well with Milan, but really, I am a little bit in love with him, like I was when he was there back then, and Bologna as well. And so credit to them, credit to Milan.
I hope Fonseca's not listening.
Hey, you know who's suddenly not looking like the genius that we want him to be all year? Simone Inzaghi. What has happened? I don't actually think it's about Inzaghi. I sort of used that as a segue because I needed one. But I don't really think it's about Inzaghi. But Lazio, I was just sort of saying, half joking about, could Atalanta force way into this? I find the idea of Atalanta, as unlikely as that is, challenging for the title now more plausible than Lazio, because Lazio to me look done. 3-0 defeat to Milan, 2-1 defeat to Lecce. There's nothing left in this team, is there?
Nikki, they haven't played well since the first half against Atalanta, right, in the restart. Mm-hmm. And then obviously they went on to lose that game. The two games that they won were either fortunate or dodgy, and the dodgy in the sense it was a bad call on the Caicedo penalty. Lecce, I know we're not, I don't want to put out here to praise, we talk about little teams, but Lecce really, really, Fabio Liverani is like a man who at this stage says, all right, screw it, we're going down, but let's go down with a fight. And it's almost like there's no pressure on these people anymore. Lecce outplayed them. Lecce went a goal behind and outplayed them.
Yeah.
And that's a serious thing. And, you know, afterwards, people in Italy, the way they're viewing this is like, oh, look, when Juve are in trouble, you know, they can bring on, you know, Douglas Costa and Ramsey and whatever, and they have a deeper bench. Although maybe that's such a great thing. When Lazio are in trouble, when people are out, you know, they're bringing on Adekanye, that other Andre Anderson, whoever that guy is, you know, which is fine to a point, but it's difficult for me to understand how after 3 months layoff, these players look jaded, they look tired, they look unfit, and they just seem to be collapsing mentally.
I so agree with this point, by the way, because it's so true. Like every time I read or hear anything, even on Twitter, every reason is to do with, well, now you can see the fact that they don't have the bench that Juventus have, or that what Inter has. And it's like, I don't really necessarily think that they needed this. They needed to have like Ronaldo on the bench to beat Lecce. So I totally agree with that. I think they're a team that relied a lot also on comebacks, and they did it even now. You know, I feel like they're the team for the comebacks. No other team in Serie A has collected as much as them. I think only Atalanta maybe. And I just feel that I don't know if there's a psychological shift as well after Milan. I feel really sorry. Obviously, they played that game without Caicedo, without, you know, Immobile. And they lost, and comprehensively, to obviously a Milan side that has been resurrected. And
although Milan, sorry, on that, I know they didn't play well against Milan, but even the there's a lot of games that they, as you said, because they've had to come back so many times.
But the defense has been bad.
No. What I would say about that game is that Milan game, in the end, it was a slightly jammy penalty of the sort that get awarded in Serie A, but maybe wouldn't be awarded elsewhere. That Çalhanoğlu goal that was, you know, took an enormous deflection. It looks really good to see. And then you see it and you see there's a huge deflection here. So even then, it seems to me like, you know, early in the season when we talked about how they were vastly outperforming expected goals and they would regress to the mean. And then they never seemed to. And then you guys made fun of me because you said, oh, you didn't believe in Lazio. Maybe they're kind of regressing to the mean now.
No. Yeah,
because
I think that's an oversimplification. I'm sorry, Gap. I understand the point. I just think the performance is a night and day. I think actually, observably, I disagree with you about the Milan game. Sure, you can talk about those goals being slightly coincidental, but there was nothing in the performance that made you think Lazio were going to win that game.
No. But Nicky, go back to what Nina said.
Before the interruption, unbeaten at home, they had a plus 27 goal difference at home. There are many ways, and you can expect it goals that all you like. There are many ways I could have constructed a scenario in which they didn't win the league. There is no way that that happened with them losing 3-0 to Milan before the break. It just isn't. They're a different team.
Nicky, if they don't go 2-0 down against Milan, those were those two goals, right? The penalty, and then they're in with a shot at the end.
They were
and
already maybe they make different badly, decisions. Gab. They were
They've been playing badly
very
since they came back.
Yes, that's
They've
the
been
point.
Playing
since
badly
they came
since
back.
The second half against
Since they came back.
But they didn't always play brilliantly earlier in the season. You know,
no, but they played better than this, Gab.
What was
they
the
did.
Game? Was it Atalanta where they had the two goals in injury time and stuff? Like, I mean, they had the first.
It was Atalanta. They had a great comeback. Put the performances side by side. This team is not playing to the same level. It just isn't. And no, that could be lots of things. I think the Atlanta game, which they came back with, is really interesting because they did start that game well. And to me, they lost that game. This is the 3-2, the first game back off the break. Because by the end of the second half, they just looked out on their feet. And that, you alluded to at the beginning of what you said. I can't explain it. I can't explain why Lazio look more tired than other people. Yes, their squad is thinner than Juventus, but it's not so thinner than everybody's. And I do think they look less energetic than they were before. They look to me like a tired team. And I think maybe it's tired emotionally as well as physically, because I think that feeling this step away from them now must have an effect on your legs as well.
Well, listen, one thing that they criticized Juventus for is that Juventus allowed their players to go on holidays and, you know, go back to their countries, and Lazio didn't. So maybe they just didn't have a holiday and now they feel a little bit caged. Or maybe that's an oversimplification. But I think what it is also, I feel like sometimes when you have a loss or when you feel like you're really like having to push yourself all the time, and you're right, they've come back and not really feeling, you know, like they're managing it. And losing to Milan, there is this point of psychological where you just feel like, oh, what are we pushing for? Because now it's just out of sight, you know? And now they're all of a sudden a team that's only really wanting the top four places, you know? We just want to guarantee Champions League. And I understand that. You have to sort of look at this from a different perspective. But I do think on that level, when you're going for something, Immobile scoring in every single game, and it's just like this magnificent, you know, ride to the front. It's momentum as well that pushes you forward. It's adrenaline that's pushing you forward. And it was so exciting. And now all of a sudden, it's like, it's become a chore. Like, we've got to keep up with Juventus. We've got to keep up with Juventus. And it's become something that's become a little bit too much. And they're not a side that is handling pressure very well as well. I agree with there's something to be looked at when it comes to why they are so unfit at this stage. I feel like Immobile is just a completely different guy. It took him several shots to get his first goal back in Serie A. And losing to Milan afterwards, I almost wasn't that shocked when it came to Lecce as well, because I just feel like on a psychological level, they don't feel the same desire anymore that they were feeling once before when they were so good. But I also agree with Gab in that I think that there were many games before as well where it was just massive comebacks. Teams would tire against them. There wasn't five substitutions. There weren't relegation battles to think about the way that there are now. Like, at this moment in time, Lecce is desperate. You know, Atalanta is desperate to make top four, maybe even make top two. So they're facing sides that are really dying to get something. Milan is dying to prove itself, you know. And perhaps a lot of the time it was just, you know, last minute goals from Immobile or whatever it was. And they always managed it. The comeback is Lazio's speciality. And perhaps maybe this time is just one comeback too much.
So there was a school of thought, Mina, that maintained that, oh, maybe Inter can get on a run and get into this because of Conte and so on. And, well, we saw against Parma and especially against Bologna how that happened. And I know, again, that this week we're under instructions not to talk about the little teams, but we have to mention the Gambia FC beating Inter, because it's such a tremendous story. Inter are 1-0 up, and we'll get to all the issues. But the two goal scorers, obviously one of them, Moussa Barrow, who we've known about for a long time, has been tremendous since the break. He came over from he was an Atalanta guy. He came over to Bologna, scored goals. But the other guy, Moussa Diawara, is just a special story because He's a kid who, at the age of 14, he's an orphan. He left his country. He came across the Mediterranean as on a boat as an illegal immigrant. And these are stories that, you know, are part of Italy right now because of where Italy's geography is in the Mediterranean. And he ended up being adopted by his coach, never scored. He only made one appearance before this season when he was at Chievo. And he scores a tremendous goal. And that was the equalizer. And then later Musa Barro makes it 2-1. I just love these fairy tale stories that come up. I don't think we can, but before we go and put the boot into Inter, we can't ignore that because this is really special, isn't it?
Oh, I think it's the most special story, especially Juara. Also, I love the fact that Mihailovic believed in him. You know, he's like, oh God, this guy creates such a mess and chaos when he plays that I just thought if I bring him on, he's definitely going to score a goal. And that's exactly what he did. And it was amazing that it was followed up by a goal by the man that he says is the idol in Musa Barro. And Barro, of course, was the guy who dedicated his first goal when he came back after COVID to Bergamo because of Atalanta and because that's the team that he played with as well. And I just remember going on Twitter and the first thing I read was, you know, Inter 1, Gambia 2. So it was
tremendous. As far as Inter concerned, one of the, because obviously we can't help but criticize, I think, stupid things. One of the things that Lukaku was criticized because Inter, and just for the context, Inter are 1-0 up. They're playing 10 men. And there's a penalty. And Lukaku is Inter's penalty taker, but he decides to let Lautaro Martinez take the penalty because Lautaro's obviously been in a funk. Lautaro misses the penalty and then Gagliardini misses the rebound. And I saw criticism of Lukaku saying that, well, you know, you do that when you're 3-0 up, you don't do it when you're 1-0 up. Oh, and I'm sorry, you're 1-0 up so against stupid. 10 men. First of all, it's not like Lukaku's Sergio Ramos when it comes to penalties. Just let him do what he thinks is best. And maybe getting Lautaro out of his funk was the right thing to do. I mean, this is nothing.
Absolutely.
Yeah, this is 0.001% of why Inter lost that game, yeah?
Yeah. Oh, I don't even... This is the thing. I actually don't, on a tactical level, on the way that they played this game, I don't want to be too harsh on it, because I actually don't think they did a bad... I know once again Eriksen was taken out of the game because that was the plan from Bologna, but I saw that there was a lot that Inter produced as well. Like, I don't think they were hideous.
Inter were great. Inter played really well for an hour. Like,
I can't
it was
blame
the most unfavorable loss.
This is it was like one of the losses.
It wasn't Inter.
But, and this is what I have an issue with as well, and this is where I want to criticize them, because look at those players. They are so scared. They are so scared. I always feel like the key to winning is having a happy squad. And for me, your coach is part psychologist, you know, part tactician, basically. And you don't need to be brilliant at both. You just need to be enough so that the guys believe in themselves. What Inter is and what I think is so good is that they're being run by a winner. Antonio Conte is a winner and was as a player and is as a coach. And he demands a lot from himself. But he also has to understand that what he's working with aren't players like Pirlo and Gianluigi Buffon or what he had at Chelsea is men who have won before. He's working with a lot of guys who are just trying to prove themselves at this point. You know, Lukaku came from lots of criticism from Manchester United. Lautaro Martinez is trying to prove he's good enough for Barcelona. Barella and Sensi are only two players from Cagliari and Sassuolo. So, you know, let's be honest, yeah. But at this point in time, they're just trying to show that they're worthy. And by constantly being like, if you don't work at 100%, and if you make mistakes, I'm going to shout at you for an hour. Sometimes you just got to say, a game is just weird, you know, like Manchester City lost to Southampton. Sometimes things happen, you know, and it doesn't mean that it requires an hour of shouting. I feel like he just is asking for too much, that he's created this climate of anxiety and fear where Martinez does miss the penalty, where Gagliardini misses an open goal. And I just feel like sometimes you just got to say, we've got this, we're good. It doesn't matter. You know, we don't need to win the Scudetto first time round. I don't need to go to the press and ask if we're all worthy of this Inter shirt. We're fine. We're growing. And we'll be there when we need to be there. And right now, maybe it doesn't matter. We make mistakes. But I have faith in you guys, because this is the better squad than what there is in Serie A. Let's be honest. It's better than Lazio's squad. Maybe not, you know, Milinkovic-Savic and Luis Alberto, but they have a very good squad. I mean, only really Juventus is better. So sometimes it makes mistakes, but I think it's based on the fact that there's so much fear at the moment and all the players are shaking.
So just to provide some context to what Mina said, I think shouting at him for an hour, it took him 90 minutes to get to his post-game interview. It's not clear whether he spent all that 90 minutes shouting at the players, to be fair. There's also other reports that said he was meeting with Marotta. Conte did show some humility, saying, I got to look at myself and some choices that I made, and I have to be the first to kind of engage in self-criticism. But yeah, Nikki, what do you think?
Well, I mean, first of all, just on an individual name there, Lukaku, I don't care what he has or hasn't won so far in his career. For me, he's the player who has most thrived under Conte. And I thought in this game particularly, I thought he was magnificent, actually. I thought he was brilliant in this game. And I think, yes, you can quibble if you really want to about whether he should have let Lautaro take that penalty at 1-0. But I thought even late in this game, when a lot of players had lost their heads, I thought I saw Lukaku looking lucid. I thought I saw him trying to drag his team forward. I thought I saw him playing really good football, even when others around him weren't, actually. So I think Lukaku, even if that conversation is happening, put him apart from it. I think he was brilliant in this game. And I think that the problem I have with your narrative, Mina, not that I think your analysis is off, but I just think that, okay, except that this is exactly how Inter have always lost. This isn't new to Conte. Like, Inter playing well and throwing away points and therefore not achieving what they should have done is exactly the trope that Conte arrived saying he was here to get rid of. That's Pazza Inter. That's exactly what he's supposed to fix. So maybe they've got to the same place by a different route. Maybe that's true. But this is not, I mean,
but this is a team.
Take it back
a
second ago with Lazio and me saying, there's many ways I could have seen them throwing the title away, but not 3-0 at home to Milan. There's many ways I could have seen Inter not challenging for the title. And this is exactly how I would have guessed they would do it, is playing well and finding a way not to take the points.
You're right. But also, Pazza Inter and what Spalletti had last season, is, I think, is quite different to what Conte is working with this season. And I feel like a lot of the players that he's got right now, from Bastoni to Lukaku to... they're guys who are in different stages, and you're right, Lukaku was excellent. There have been many excellent players. Roca Valero has been really good recently, and obviously you have people who have won before, so it's not... and they are crazy. But I do think that what's happening is there is just this climate of anxiety at the moment, and I don't think there needs to be, because he is a winner. Conte is very good. We know that he's very good. We have question marks when it comes to Europe, but I don't want this to be resolved with, let's bring in other players who are used to winning. You know, let's bring in more. Let's keep buying all the top stars in the world. It doesn't need to be that way. You already have a very, very good team, certainly one capable of pushing Juventus to the very end. And so I need you to believe in that as well. I need you to believe in your ability. So sometimes I think that when you make a lot of these mistakes, they are just based on the fact that you're scared and you're shaking, as opposed to you're actually not good enough. That was my point.
If I can just, before we move on, I'm going to use a tiny, tiny addendum to what Nikki said about this whole Pazza Inter thing. And it's not about Inter playing well and then throwing it away. It's because, thinking back to when Inter have played well over the past 30 years, and maybe Mancini's first and second season, maybe a little bit with Leonardo, but Inter haven't played well probably since Trapattoni. And that was in the late 1980s. The whole Pazza Inter thing is about Inter having a lead and then chucking it away. That is the trope. It's not them playing well, because they rarely, relative to other big clubs.
I think that's a whole different debate. That would be a whole podcast that would, they've played well in the last 20 years, 30 years.
Okay, I mean, if we talk about Inter, I just feel like this is a conversation that might never end. So I'm going to quickly pivot to the knee-jerk reaction, because, you know, we can just be here all day. So let's move on to our favourite segment. And Nikki, let's start off with you. What do you have, having looked at that week of football?
I think my knee-jerk reaction is just, however this shakes out with Rangnick, that Stefano Pioli has handled himself so, so well during this sort of phase of having his future constantly discussed, having his sort of assumption hanging over him that he's not hanging around. He's not let that become a distraction. And he's got his team playing so well that in the last two games, they've beaten the team sat first and second in Serie A. And they've done it really convincingly in the end, even going 2-0 down against Juventus. So my reaction is just that Pioli is, whatever else comes or doesn't come for Milan, Pioli's stock, his reputation as a manager is only climbing in this period. And certainly my impression of him as a manager is only improving in this period. I think he's doing really, really well.
Yeah, what about you?
I'm going to go back to somebody who we rarely mention and mentioned only in passing. That would be Cristiano Ronaldo, because lost in all this nonsense is, I think it's 21 goals in his last 17 games for Juve. And I know he's had a bunch of penalties and stuff like that, but he's played really, really well, I think. And, you know, the guy's 35 years old and he's coming after that long layoff. I think that's pretty remarkable this season. So, you know, much as some people criticize him, when he plays poorly, I think we should recognize when he's on a good run.
Oh, and it's also course, since our last show, he scored a free kick.
Woohoo!
And he scored a free kick. That's right, yes.
Yeah. After 42, I think, attempts. My God, he was so happy that he managed that. But, yeah, he's truly been someone to rely on. I was wondering, actually, when we were thinking about all of this and when we were talking about Lazio, one of the reasons why they haven't come in, I wonder whether not being able to play in front of the home crowd and not having the fans there to really wire them up is something that's really affected them as well. And you can see, like, some of their fans come over and sort of, like, help the team bus when it's on its way and wave them off and all of this. And maybe that's not enough. Maybe they need to have them the whole way around. I don't know.
I think that's meaningful. Again, before the break, they were unbeaten at home. They'd only drawn three of those games, and they had a plus 27 goal difference at home. That was a fortress for them. I think it's meaningful, for sure.
This is the first time, what, that they've managed a loss? Yeah, at home, exactly that, to Milan. Meanwhile, I want to say, like, you know, credit to Spal for having... They're the only team that Atalanta haven't beaten this year. They managed to really shake up Milan as well. Credit to Lecce that continues to do astonishing stuff, whether it's against, obviously, Juventus, they also managed to scare as well. So well done to those little teams that keep pushing forward. But that's it. I still love you, Roma. Fonseca, you're still my king. and they are starting to get a little better, even if they're not picking up points. But that's all we have from me. Thank you, guys. Thank you to you, listener, for watching and for listening to the Serie A Awesome podcast. There's some great matches coming up this weekend. Of course, Napoli also faces off against Milan, so that's going to be so much fun. Atalanta play tonight, and then they take on Juventus. So maybe even more losses coming by Sarri's way. We'll see. But until next week, we hope you enjoy all that Serie A brings. See you then.